Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop renewable. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! I told you I might not have to go anywhere, and I didn't. It turned out to be a little bit of a too logistically difficult for me to get on the road this evening. So instead, I am happily, I might add, behind the microphone in the chair and ready to roll. So here we go. It is Wednesday. It is the middle of the week. It's hump day. It's downhill to Friday. Yes, you know all these things. But this being the horn and all, you know that it is, so much more. Because we have real religious sensibilities here at the Horn. And that means that Wednesdays are special. Yes, yes, you know that, you know that. That means that Wednesdays are prayer meeting Wednesdays. So we will ask the Minister of Music if he will please come forward and lead us in our opening hymn. And just remember, brethren and sistren, as the little plate comes by, it's got a little button that says PayPal down in the bottom of it. All you got to do is press it once to the tune of $10 a month. That's all you got to do. $10 a month as the plate comes by. Every head bowed and every eye closed during our offertory hymn as we keep the doors open here at the Horn, the Cathedral of Common Sense. Brother Minister of Music, if you would, please.
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around.
I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little plate when it comes around.
And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
Ooh, ee, ooh, ah, ah, ting, tang, walla, walla, bing, bang, I love you. Welcome, 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 brethren and sistren, to the Cathedral of Common Sense. Come on down, don't be fooling around out in the parking lot. Smoking with the sinners, come on in, drag the deacons with you. They're always the last into the seats. That's why we put them on the front pew, so I can throw a brick at them when they start to nodding off a little bit. Come on in, get through the vestibule, down past the 20-year-old buttermints, and come on down that blood-red aisle, brethren and sistren, and get on your knees. Fall upon your knees before the altar, and lay your hands upon the subwoofer, and feel those thunderous booming waves of common sense filling and fulfilling your body from the server on high. This is the Cathedral of Common Sense, and I am Archpope, Senior Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Devoted Elder, and Noble Prophet, Senior Animist, Bob Kincaid, and this is Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Now, I had a story with you. I had a story to begin Prayer Meeting Wednesday this evening. And I got to tell you, I lost it. I had a story about a priest of some particular branch of XDianity, Christianity, what have you, who had actually pled guilty, or not, been convicted of having sex with a teenage girl. I guess you could say he flocked her. But I couldn't find the story. And yet, by the same token, the story is in me not finding the story, in a way. What do I mean by that? Well, this is what I mean by that. So I type into the Google, priest convicted for sexual abuse of teenage girl. You would think, among other things, that the teenage girl part would provide a little bit of differentiation. No. I got thousands and thousands of hits. Database of priests accused of sexual abuse. Database of priests accused of sexual abuse. There were three of those. Roman Catholic sex abuse cases by country. Child sexual abuse by Roman Catholic clergy. Priest accused of sex abuse charged with soliciting someone to. Priest's involvement with girl leads to dismissal. On and on and on. L.A. priest removed for affair 40 years ago. Church in crisis. Abuse revelations hit Los Angeles church. Priest abuse attorney molestation lawsuit. And that's just the first page. Godspeed. L.A. priest accused in 1980. This is a huge problem inside Christianity, that Christianity still has no clue how to deal with. And there I was. I thought this was my story, but no, this is not my story. This is the Reverend Martin P. O'Loughlin, who was once a leader in his religious order and was appointed to an archdiocesan sexual abuse advisory board, even though... And this is just a month ago, even though the archdiocese and his particular order knew that he had already admitted to having committed sexual abuse and to being addicted to sex, still he was appointed to an archdiocesan sexual abuse advisory board. Talk about putting, what kind of simile could you, or metaphor could you make that wouldn't be just incredibly offensive? Well, this guy has been removed from his current parish in San Dimas, but this still isn't the guy that I was after. Because he had a name, I would have recognized the name. But the problems of the church are manifest. And they're there not because of anything magical, but because they have an authoritarian structure that draws these sexual predators to it, like flies to rotting meat. So there you go. You lose one, you get 10,000 others. Welcome to religion. Meanwhile, there's a little bit more fallout. No, that's the wrong word. There is some pushback. There is some... what word can I use that's not going to be troublesome? Well, let's put it this way. A lot of people jumped out and started hollering about divine retribution being the source of the earthquake and the tsunami and the nuclear disaster in Japan. Including, as we played the audio last night on the program, the Beckerhead, Glenn Beck. Well, guess what? Apparently, there's nothing new. Let's put it this way. There's nothing new in so-called Christians calling down the wrath of their, or blaming the wrath of their loving God for any given disaster. You know what's happened. Well, the governor of Tokyo has apologized for saying that the tsunami and earthquake were divine retribution for national egoism. And, of course, like I said, Glenn Beck. We haven't heard yet from Pastor Hagee or from Pastor Huxterby. But it's worth remembering that these guys love their publicity and they jump out there every time they can point the finger at their God of love and say that, hey, everybody, you heathens, our God of love killed your loved ones because he's a God of love and a killer. What do I mean? Well, let's see. Let's go back a year or so, a couple of years. After Haiti's earthquake in 2009, Pat Robertson said the pact with the devil was to blame for Haiti being stricken. Haiti's pact with the devil. Yeah. Another case of the loving God. Pastor Hagee with Hurricane Katrina. All hurricanes are acts of God because God controls the heavens. I believe that New Orleans had a level of sin that was offensive to God, and they were recipients of the judgment of God for that. Amen. September 11th, of course, Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell said that September 11th was brought, 2001 was brought about by gays, lesbians, and the Americans for Separation for Church and State, the ACLU, People for the American Way. Yeah. But here's one I bet you didn't know about. The Civil War. The Civil War, or what up until a generation or so ago, Southern school children were taught to think of as the War of Northern Aggression. It was 1862 when Abraham Lincoln wrote, I am almost ready to say this is probably true, that God wills this contest and wills that it shall not end yet. He could give the final victory to either side any day, yet the contest proceeds. Yeah. Oh, it goes on and on and on, doesn't it? There's always some member of the religion industry who is willing to blame God for natural disaster brought about by the folly of men. For it is the doom of men that they forget. Right? And, of course, most recently, yes, the governor of Tokyo, Shintaro Ishihara, said, I think the disaster is tembatsu, divine punishment, although I feel sorry for disaster victims. Sick bastard. By the way, just in there's anybody who thinks that we don't have a state religion in this country needs to think again. I give you Alaska Airlines. I don't know. You let Mussolini fly a couple of times, and the next thing you know, she's converted the whole damned corporation. What happened? I'll tell you. Alaska Airlines has had to issue an apology. It was this past weekend when three Orthodox Jewish businessmen were aboard a flight to Los Angeles, and shortly after takeoff of flight 241 from Mexico City to Los Angeles, these three Orthodox Jewish men, businessmen, started praying out loud in Hebrew. And everybody flipped out. Hebrew! Which is, of course, a kissing cousin, philologically, I suppose, to the other Semitic languages, you know, Arabic, Aramaic, that kind of thing. All of which come from a branch of language called Nilo-Saharan. You know, English, German, the languages of the Indian subcontinent, Farsi, I think. They all come from what we call the Indo-European language tree. Well, Hebrew and Arabic and Aramaic and so forth, they come from the Nilo-Saharan language branch. So I guess if you work for Alaska Airlines and you hear somebody speaking a language that isn't yours and isn't easily identifiable as Spanish, French, German, Farsi, Hindi, Latin, Greek, you figure that they're probably just getting ready to pray your plane right out of the sky. And so that's what happened. Flight attendants, hearing the out loud praying in the Hebrew, sort of walked very quietly, very carefully, no sudden moves, up to the flight deck and told the pilot, we got some Middle Easterners back there, and they're praying. They're praying out loud together at the same time. Oh, boss, this ain't going to be good. So the flight deck then placed a little radio call to the tower at LAX. And LAX went into sweat condition alpha, so that when flight 241 of Alaska Airlines from Mexico City to LAX landed and got to the gate, lo and behold, there stood the FBI, the Customs and Border Protection, and airport police. At which point, the three men of dubious language were questioned, their bags were searched, and the FBI determined that they were not a threat. Well, here's the apology from Alaska Airlines spokeswoman Bobby Egan.
Alaska Airlines embraces the cultural and religious diversity of our passengers and employees. We apologize for the experience these three passengers went through after landing in Los Angeles, as well as for any inconvenience to our other customers on board.
Jesus, at least they didn't call them clients. Customers?
Passengers!
Poor little language just gets taken out and beaten half to death all the time.
Passengers!
Alaska Airlines says it plans to update its awareness training of Orthodox Jews. Know your Orthodox Jew! And is reaching out to the Jewish Federation of Greater Seattle for help. Of course, this is... I can't prove this. This is laid at the feet of the flight attendants. But you know how Americans are. And you know how the ignorant are as well. You know what went down. Because we've heard the stories. I
saw those men and they were saying things in that strange terrorist language of theirs, and I just became very... My God in heaven, who was it recently? The Juan Williams. Juan Williams. You know, liberal Juan.
No, not exactly. Well, I don't know about you, but I get awfully nervous sitting next to
those people on an airplane. I just can't help wonder if they're going to crash us into the... Which was the beginning of NPR's troubles, or current troubles in many ways. A little cup of tea. So they're going to have awareness training of is this kind of like what people, the drills that people went through during World War II, where you had to be able to tell from the underside whether you were looking at a Betty or a Kate or a Zeke or a BF-109 or a BF-110 or an FW-190? Know your Orthodox Jew. Just astonishing. Of course, by the same token, really, come on. It's an air flight from Mexico City to LAX. It's not the Exodus. You can't get from... Really, guys? You can't make it from Mexico City to LAX without engaging in group prayer and scaring the morons half out of their minds. Is your God that forgetful? We're just reminding God up there that we're here on this airplane. Really would appreciate it if it didn't fall out of the sky. I think you're going to have a lot more luck trusting to the rules of physics than the caprice of God. I mean, see, I don't like musical theater. I'll tell you, I don't like opera and I don't like musical theater. I don't like musical theater just because I like there to be some basic semblance of reality between what I'm seeing on the screen or what I'm seeing on the stage. In other words, human beings talking and interacting. Because in my world, there just aren't a lot of people who spontaneously break into song. And that's what annoys me about musical theater and opera. All these people running around breaking... There's a bright golden haze on the meadow. No! And it's the same thing. What happened to praying silently? Jesus, please. Or at least quietly. Please. Please, God. Keep this plane in the air. This is an Alaska Airlines flight. It may have been wholly corrupted by Sarah Palin. Please keep this plane in the air and let us land safely at LAX instead of going down in a ball of flames in the Gulf of Cortez, please. But no, we can't do that. We got to do it out loud. Got to make sure that everybody knows how pious and holy we are. Got to make sure everybody knows that we're on a first-name basis with God. And I have no more respect for people doing that than I do... And I mean, it is not sectarian. If some phony-ass Christians were sitting there babbling shamalama ding-dong at each other in tongues and passing out the water moccasins... I would object to that, too. Sit quietly, wait for your complimentary bag of goddamn peanuts, and shut the up! Because you're not doing anybody any good. Maybe you're making yourself feel better, but you're not doing anybody any good. Because you're praying. You're talking to the air. You're talking to the invisible, largely unreal thing. Just silly. And again, I don't care if you're praying in Arabic, Hebrew, Hindi, English, redneck. I don't care. Do it silently. Oh, there's another movie reference. The Birdcage, Robin Williams. Yeah. You do Twyla Tharp. Martha Graham. And here's the trick. You do it all in your head. There are religious problems that beset this country that we do not even begin to fully comprehend. I mean, Lord have mercy. Now here's a real religious problem. Not like trying to pray the air, you know, the air pressure up under the wings of the plane to keep the big iron metal bird in the sky. No. Get this. At Fort Bragg, North Carolina, a Billy Graham Evangelical Association group had hosted a concert that received from Fort Bragg, from the federal government, out of your pocket, $52,475.80. And you can bet they hung on to the bitter end for that 80 cents, too. Remember the opening hymn? I've got all of heaven's riches because... Right. The Billy Graham Evangelical Association ran a concert at Fort Bragg that cost $52,475.80 of your money so that they could proselytize... members of the military who didn't have just a hell of a lot of say in whether or not they attended this damn stupid thing. So guess what? Now, bear in mind that about 21% of active duty personnel in the United States military are non-religious. In other words, they are rational. So, what happens? Well, in the name of providing something for that 21% who are rational, who don't believe in monsters under their bed or invisible friends in the sky, Rock Beyond Belief was formed. It was to be a secular music festival. And it was to be a sort of response to the Billy Graham Evangelical Association, the dumb show. Well, it was canceled. It was slated for April the 2nd, 2011, but Rock Beyond Belief was canned because the base commander at Fort Bragg would not cooperate with event organizers. I'm afeard to be cooperating with them atheists. My invisible friend wouldn't like that. So not only no Rock Beyond Belief concert, but there also wasn't $52,475.80 of your money for it either. I guess that's one of the things that plagues non-believers, is that they can't start sitting in an airplane and babbling in a foreign language. God Almighty! Yeah, there's the question, Jim. What if they should speak tongues in flight? Well, I'm more worried about what happens when they break out the water moccasins and the copperheads. That quote from Abraham Lincoln? Ron picked up on this real quick. You'll notice that Old Honest Abe wasn't into eliminationist rhetoric either. Lincoln went on to say, people ask me if God is on our side. I am much more concerned with whether we are on God's side. But it's just another day in religion. Just another day of superstition and fear and the hate that goes with religion. And of course, it takes money to run all that fear and hate through a country as big as the United States. Takes a lot of money. But presidential hopeful Newt Gingrich, serial marrier, Well, he funneled remember, he got busted for financial shenanigans, and that's why he had to stop being Speaker of the House. Financial crimes. He was censured by the House of Representatives for his dodgy, dirty financial dealings. Well, he funneled $350,000 to hate groups that support anti-gay agendas. Of the $850,000 that went into the campaign to remove Iowa Supreme Court justices who had held in favor of basic dignity and basic human rights, of the $850,000 that went into that campaign, $350,000 came from Newt Gingrich. And, of course, he did it dirty, because he funneled, among other things, $200,000 to the anti-human rights group called Iowa for Freedom. Iowa for Freedom was also funded by the American Family Association of Tupelo, Mississippi. The $200,000 came from Gingrich, but he ran it into Iowa for Freedom via an anonymous donor. Why, Newt? You Christian, you? Didn't you ever read that thing about, do not hide your light under a bushel, but let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works before your Father which is in heaven? What you ashamed of there, Newtsy? Dirty little bastard. Filthy little bastard. Disgusting.
Oh, what a hypocrite!
Thank you, Tweety, yes. But hate, you know, hate is on the march. And hate is most often on the march as a direct and proximate result of Christians. Christians. And I got lots of examples this prayer meeting Wednesday. A boatload. I got enough probably to keep us going for 2 or 3 hours, but I'm not going to do that. We will open the phones here presently. A little something from here in wild, wonderful, almost level West Virginia. Disgusting. Because, you see, hate is going to carry the day for another year or so at least here in my home state. It will not be safe in my home state to be gay, to be lesbian, to be bisexual, to be transgendered, queer questioning, or any of the other phrases that obtain. No, it is not safe. And you know what? What is more, and perhaps this is in a way more important because it has real-world ramifications with which I am personally familiar, it's not only not safe to be that, it's not safe to be perceived as that. The particular story from here in West Virginia concerns a coal miner by the name of Sam Hall. A coal miner for Massey Energy, of course. When people found out he was gay, he was threatened, he was subjected to vandalism, and he was constantly verbally abused while he was at work. We have a civil rights law here in West Virginia. It protects you against harassment based on your race, your religion, a disability. But we've never been able to get sexual orientation into that Declaration of Basic Human Rights and Protection of Basic Human Rights. Two bills were introduced in West Virginia's legislature this year. They were killed. Well, no, they were stopped. They were eliminated. They were eliminated by the West Virginia Family Foundation. This is the same foundation that when the Attorney General several years ago tried to institute a non-bullying program in the public schools, came out four square against it, declaring that they have an absolute First Amendment right to hate people based on what they think those people are. We have a fascination with firearms here in West Virginia, and it's a sick one. It includes a senator who used firearm imagery in the run-up to the November election, barely weeks before the anniversary of the JFK assassination, used a high-powered rifle to shoot the cap-and-trade bill out in the woods. Took it out in the woods and killed it. Joe Manchin done. Well, that never let the West Virginia Family Foundation be accused of being behind the eliminationist curve. The West Virginia Family Foundation maintains that traditional marriage is under an unrelenting attack. And they proved it with an image of crosshairs on a family. A heterosexual family, I might add. Yeah, the anti-bullying bill also failed. The West Virginia Family Foundation opposed that as well. There is a big uproar right now over bullying since President Obama has mentioned bullying as being something that maybe the United States ought not to sanction or engage in. And the teabaggers have been mobilized. They had themselves a teabagging policy summit in Arizona last month, where Andy Blom, the executive director of American Principles Project, was in attendance. He's been instrumental, part and parcel, in getting the mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, house helmet wearing, knee pad and elbow pad festooned oatmeal dribblers of the teabagging outfits involved in speaking out against any legislation that would curtail the tormenting of little human beings over their perceived sexual orientation. Again, I say this is close to home for me because my own son has been hospitalized after having been viciously stomped while little redneck heathens screamed faggot at him. But in Andy Blom's world, in Andy Blom's world, that didn't happen. In Andy Blom's world, little middle schoolers don't get stomped. I give you about as much as you're ever going to want to hear. I give you a minute and 42 seconds of Andy Blom.
PTA boards, what have you. Could you talk a little bit about that and what kind of agenda is?
Well, the core of the anti-bullying agenda is all gender-based. And this is a really serious mistake for a lot of reasons. Bullying is not good. The reasons people are bullied are size, clothing, economic circumstance, race. So anything having to do with gender falls down around number 5 or number 6. But all of the curriculum on bullying is about LGBT, lesbian, bi, gay, transgendered. All of it is being used as an opportunity to force homosexual teaching into the schools. And we, you know, the curriculums, when you start to peel this and look at the curriculums, it's frightening what people want to teach under the rubric of bullying. And because being in favor of bullying is like, you know, hating apple pie, it's being very effective at skidding a lot of very unseemly things into curriculums. And there's legislation on the Hill that would force private and parochial schools to adopt the same anti-government, anti-bullying thing. So you know, this means Catholic schools are teaching about the pleasures of homosexual sex, or teaching about, you know, Johnny has two daddies, if they're able to push this through, because the whole, you know, I was trying to think of a less dramatic way of saying this, but in truth, the whole homosexual agenda gets filtered into the schools through anti-bullying.
Thanks to the folks at Think Progress for going and having the stomach to engage in a conversation with this nauseating piece of human filth. Did you catch that? Nobody gets bullied, or, you know, maybe five or six on the bullying scale. People aren't bullied because they're gay, or perceived to be gay, or lesbian, or bisexual, or transgendered, or just weird. No, that doesn't happen. It doesn't happen in Andy Blom's world. Doesn't happen. My son never went to the hospital with a testicle swollen to two or three times its normal size because he had been viciously stomped while having the word faggot screamed at him. Never happened. Doesn't happen. And they're always so fascinated with the sexual aspect of homosexuality, when really the sexual aspect, as Peter Gottbold repeatedly noted in his landmark, groundbreaking program on the Horn, Strictly Confidential, the sex is the last part of it. It's a matter of being able to love whom you want to love. I mean, I'm a part of a heterosexual couple. You know, we've got a traditional family marriage here, my wife Agnes and I. And I got to tell you, and I'm not trying to be gross or anything, but even in the earliest days of our romance, the sex was not always the first thing on my mind. But these right-wing, homophobic, sick, twisted, probably latent, closeted bigots can't get their minds off the gay sex. Did you hear that? They're going to force private and parochial schools to adopt the same anti-bullying thing. So this means Catholic schools are teaching about the pleasures of homosexual sex, or teaching about, you know, Johnny has two daddies, if they're able to push this through. All the time, you just can't get around all these homophobic bigots. They're always talking about things being pushed through and skidded and having things rammed down their throats. That Affordable Care Act was rammed down our throats. Dear God. So teaching children that it's wrong to beat up other children because you think they might be different from you automatically means that Roman Catholic schools are going to have to teach about, quote-unquote, the pleasures of homosexual sex. Kind of makes you wonder how often Andy Blom sits around wishing he could have a man in his mouth. Thank you, Bart Kopp. I mean, there's... Jesus. Now, this is the same freak who led an effort to boycott the Conservative Political Action Convention because GOPAC, a group of very strange gay people who yet remain conservative Republicans, and they're not strange because they're gay, they're strange because they're conservative Republicans. I don't know, Stockholm Syndrome, something like that. This is the kind of thing that $350,000 from Newt Gingrich funded. This is what Newt Gingrich thinks of Americans who don't have sex the way he does and don't love the way he does, you know, serially, with one woman after another, after another, after another, after another. But while Andy Blom, you see, says that there's no such thing as anti-gay bullying in the schools, it is a sad fact that he is so very, very wrong. I offer you the story of Anthony Kalau. Lottie, our chat room moderator, sent this along. Anthony Kalau, C-O-L-L-A-O, graduated from high school recently in Queens. This past Saturday night, he went to a birthday party for a friend of his. The party was thrown by two gay men. And somewhere along the way at that party, something went horribly, horribly wrong. The party was held and advertised on Facebook as having a $7 cover charge. Alex Velez, age 16, and Nolis Ogando, Christopher Lozada, and Luis Tabales, all 17 years old, crashed the party, wouldn't pay the cover charge, stormed into the home, knocking out windows, picked fights. The home was an abandoned one, certainly not unusual in this day and age. There was no electricity. The report says that the party crashers flashed gang signs, whatever the hell that means. But more importantly, they started screaming anti-gay slurs and writing epithets in red marker all over the walls. The guy who was celebrating his 20th birthday said they called us homos and all kinds of stuff. Well, being an intelligent young man, Anthony Kalau saw a bad situation developing and decided to do what any parent would advise their 18-year-old teenage son to do in such circumstances, to get the hell away. Alex Velez, Nolis Ogando, Christopher Lozada, and Luis Tabales gave chase. By the way, did I mention that Anthony Kalau was straight? Yeah, was. Past tense. Because the gang gave chase, the gang caught up, pinned him against an automobile, and beat him to death. They kicked him. They punched him. They used a pipe. Anthony Kalau was taken off of life support this past Monday. Not because he was gay, but merely because ignorant, violent thugs perceived him as such by nothing more than association and made him pay for it with his life. Made him and pay for it with his life. And that is the hate that $350,000 through an anonymous donor, that's the kind of hate that Newt Gingrich pays for, and for which he will never, never be confronted by anyone in the for-profit media. Never. And that is the kind of violence and hate that Andy Blom has the power to merely ignore.
PTA boards, what have you. Could you talk a little bit about that and what the kind of agenda is?
Well, the core of the anti-bullying agenda is all gender-based. And this is a really serious mistake for a lot of reasons. Bullying is not good. Okay? The reasons people are bullied are size, clothing, economic circumstance, race.
Now, hold on. There was nothing in that report that said Anthony Kalau was 4'10". There's nothing in that report that says Anthony Kalau was wearing the wrong clothing, as if that could still be a reason. Oh, but wait, I've got that too. There's nothing that says Anthony Kalau was giving off auras of being of the wrong economic circumstance, to use Blom's word. And they didn't scream racial epithets. They screamed homophobic epithets as they stomped Anthony Kalau to death. And let's understand one thing once and for all. Every time Andy Blom or Newt Gingrich or any religious fundamentalist or follower of fundamentalist teaching or the literal interpretation of the Bible, every time one of them talks about their right to hate people for how they love, they help create another nightmare like the one that caught up with Anthony Kalau. When Lottie sent me this story, I hung my head in grief and thought for a moment, that could have been my son. Because Anthony Kalau is someone's son. But Andy Blom and Newt Gingrich and every homophobic fundamentalist pastor and churchgoer in this country has a few drops of Anthony Kalau's blood on their hands for the hate that they teach and for the weird fascination that they have with love, the act, the physical act of love between two people of the same sex. Now, there's legislation on the Hill to force private and parochial schools to adopt the same anti-bullying thing. So this means Catholic schools are teaching about the pleasures of homosexual sex. Are teaching about, you know, Johnny has two daddies. If they're able to push this through. The whole homosexual agenda gets filtered into the schools through anti-bullying. There's your fundamentalist Christianity. There's your conservative family values. Yes. Yes, indeed. My God. My God. Will there ever come a time when the Andy Bloms and the Newt Gingriches and the American Family Associations and the Wildmon family and the beat children till they cry real tears, Dobsons of the world, until we are finally free of these monsters? Or the question, or is it merely the nasty, vile, hate-filled, dark side of what it is to be human, to finally give up and merely say, okay, yeah, we got the bloody bone in our hands and we're going a dancing around the monolith? Do we ever get a break? Is there ever going to be a time when love it goes on and on and on. A TG girl, a transgendered person, was murdered in Arkansas. And the St. Francis County, Arkansas sheriff said of the murder of a black TG person, a murder that involved a bullet through the head followed by a good old-fashioned dragging behind an automobile, the sheriff said, "Why, it's just prostitution gone bad. This ain't no hate crime." Thank God. Thank God. We are a Christian nation. And it happens all the time. These aren't rare instances. Murder stalks the TG community, and anybody in the TG community will tell you that it does. Murder stalks the gay community. But all too often we forget that, as the old saying goes, perception is reality. And for a hate-filled member of the right wing, you don't even have to be what they hate. They can just pretend that you are, kill you bloody dead, leave you lying in the streets, and then have a parade the next day in which they say, "My religious freedom allows me to hate." Praise Jesus. Breathtaking hate. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. It's Prayer Meeting Wednesday. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D at gmail.com. We'll be right back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Bubble Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, it's stuff for my dog.
Holy crap. There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Bubble Genius. We got your soap right here.
And don't forget about that body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Hour two does begin. It's 8 minutes past the hour. And we will go straight away to conversation after a couple of a quick visit to the email bag. Darlene, with a mention here. Hey, Bob, did you see this article? This quacky Republican from Florida, a woman no less, State Representative Kathleen Passidomo, blamed the alleged rape of an 11-year-old girl in Texas by 18 men and boys. On the 11-year-old girl, one girl, 18 men and boys, because of, wait for it, how she was dressed. All this took place during a debate over passage of a bill to legislate a dress code for Florida students. Yeah. Kathleen Passidomo, another member of the broken-brained sickness that is right-wing conservative repig-lickanism in America. She, and Texas Betsy telling me, yes, the whole town blamed this little girl, 11 years old, this little girl. Here's what Kathleen Passidomo said. There was an article about an 11-year-old girl who was gang-raped in Texas by 18 young men because she was dressed up like a 21-year-old prostitute. And her parents let her attend school like that. And I think it's incumbent upon us to create some areas where students can be safe in school and show up in proper attire so what happened in Texas doesn't happen to our students. This is in a debate over a bill that would enforce a dress or adopt a dress code that bans students from wearing, quote, clothing that exposes underwear or body parts in an indecent or vulgar manner. I don't know. I'm guessing maybe that Wallace girl, the Barbie from last night's hate rant out at UCLA, might be in real trouble in Florida. Florida! Have you been to a beach lately? Well, we don't dress that way in our schools. You know, it's moments like this, I'm so glad that I do get to take the occasional trip and learn things like I learned about exaggerated visibility. About why young men dress the way they do, because that's we can't tolerate this wearing our pants halfway down our and you can see their plaid boxer shorts, and it gives me the vipers, I swear it does. All of this is just cover for they can't. They're like that. They just think about sex all the time. The right wing is obsessed with the mechanics of homosexual sex acts at the same time that they are obsessed with the mechanics of heterosexual sex acts if the sex acts are being performed by people that they deem to be of a dangerous skin tone. God Almighty! Brandon Thorpe, writing for the Broward Palm Beach New Times, said, blaming the rape of an 11-year-old girl on her parents' sense of fashion, and to do so out loud smacks of rank amateurism. The child, the 11-year-old girl from Texas, the little girl, is being held in foster care, and her parents have gone into hiding because they fear for their safety. And Kathleen Pasadomo didn't even have enough guts to own her... Well, they never do! To own her own language. Someone wrote to Kathleen Pasadomo about her hateful remarks, and she said, well, thank you for your concern. I was not referring to my own opinion to the cause of the rape, but to the cause implied by a March 8th article of the New York Times. Oh! It's the New York Times' fault! Liberal media! But notice that. Create some areas where students can be safe in school and show up in proper attire so what happened in Texas doesn't happen to our students. We don't want our students coming to school looking like little whores so that 18 men and boys will just jump on them because they look like whores. This isn't a sex problem. This isn't a race problem. This is an America problem. And these godforsaken dress codes are little more than attempts to render people engaging in exaggerated visibility, to render them invisible once more. Because right-wingers, repiglicans, conservatives, tea-baggers, mouth-breathers, knuckle-walkers like to live in an America where, like Andy Blum, they just don't see the horror. Fingers in ears and eyes shut. La 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 la, not happening, not happening, not happening, not happening. Ron and Raleigh noting, hey, Bob, did I miss it, or did this jerk not include race in his reasons for bullying? Could you play that list again? I don't have the stomach for it. But no, race wasn't there. Economic circumstance was. That's what right-wingers use instead of race now. You know, they're urban. That's code for black. They're urban, and they come from impoverished conditions. The impoverished economic circumstance. And how they're dressed. He didn't mention how they're dressed. That, too, is code for, you know, wearing his pants halfway down his bottom. We have an America problem. But even something, you know, they accused the 11-year-old girl of being dressed like a tramp. A modern-day Jezebel. That's how it gets said in the churches. But even when the right wing and the religion industry gets around to finally addressing problems related to sexual predation, they still get it wrong. Witness. Because you're going to... Witness Tony Perkins. Norman! Yes, Mother Bates. Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council, who bought his very first, by the way, who bought his very first mass mailing list from none other than Klansman David Duke. That's the power base, the freaking Klan supporters. That's the power base of the Christian Family Research Council. I offer you Tony Perkins.
Sex trafficking. The State Department reports internationally over 2 million people are victims of human trafficking each year, with between 15 and 18,000 of them being brought into the United States for this purpose, most of them illegally. What most Americans are not...
Oh my Jesus, illegal alien hookers! See how they are?
...not aware of is that sex trafficking within the United States is a rapidly growing problem and a clear and present danger to our children. Just a few miles outside the nation's capital, 42-year-old Derwin Smith, earlier this month, pleaded guilty to prostituting a 12-year-old girl he had quote-unquote picked up on the street. While we would all like to think that this is an isolated and rare occurrence, the numbers would suggest otherwise. As many as 100,000 girls are trafficked in the United States each year. What's fueling this epidemic? A number of factors contribute to the increase in sex trafficking. The breakup of the family is a major contributor. The best protection against being lured into sex trafficking for a young girl is a father in the home who is married to the child's mother. The explosion of obscenity and pornographic material on the internet and apparent indifference from federal law enforcement officials, all facilitated by the postmodern view of morality that essentially says there is no right or wrong.
Yeah, because I'm a liberal, you know, and I don't. Now, we never spend any time talking about right or wrong. Oh, hell no, Tony Perkins. Norman! Oh, hell no, you know, because, well, you know, 11-year-old little girl gets raped by 17, 18 guys. Well, you know, whatever. Might have been right, might have been wrong. Toss a coin. No, but yeah, because we're all postmodern. You hear all these excuses? A father in the home. Well, you know how it is. When you got them married lesbians, the married Lebanese, there ain't no father in the home, and they're just gonna, if they have a daughter or anything, they're just gonna throw her out on the street and have her start hooking. Probably just pimp her themselves. Maybe watch. Evil bastards. Listen to him. No, it's not postmodernism, Tony. How's David Duke, by the way? When'd you hear from him last? It's not postmodernism. It's not the absence of fathers. How about kids who lose their homes because their families become homeless? Because maybe their home's been foreclosed upon by some silk-stockinged, silk-suited bankster on Wall Street. How about that, Tony Perkins? But no, Tony Perkins, you are hand in glove with the right wing. So we won't talk about any predatory economic conduct by the people who keep you in lobsters. No. He goes on and he says that, you know, law enforcement organizations, they don't care about sex trafficking. Oh, yes, they do. But every time they try to bring anything to bear on the issue, they find themselves unfunded. Because repiglicans like Tony Perkins don't like to pay effing taxes. Because taxes aren't, well, Jesus don't love taxes. You try to give law enforcement the power and the ability to deal with sex trafficking, the GOP, the repiglicans, stop it every time. Planned Parenthood does amazing work preventing sex trafficking. But the GOP wants to defund Planned Parenthood. Hell, the GOP would bomb Planned Parenthood if they could get away with it. Damn. Just damn. And see, the thing is, they don't want a solution to any of this because they rather like it. Because these are the young prostitutes that they visit when they're on junkets and when they're on conference trips and when they're on business trips and when they're at the Republican National Convention. But they have to give lip service to it once in a while so that they can make sure that their knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, house-helmet-wearing, oatmeal-dribbling faithful continue to be reminded that It's the liberals that want to wear people, let boys wear their pants down halfway past their bottoms. It's the liberals! It's the liberals that like to dress little girls up, little 11-year-old girls, dress them up like prostitutes and let them get gang raped by 17 men. It's the liberals. It's our permissive, postmodern, liberal, fatherless society in which the traditional, sanctified, holy Jesus marriage has been taken away by them homosexuals. Oh, Muriel, what is America coming to? Quick, let's get to church. Pray and pray, live on hay. There'll be pie in the sky when you die. Let's go to the phones. What do you say? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Doing pretty good.
Okay, how you been?
I've been good, Gary. How about you?
Okay. I'm sorry to hear about your son.
That was 3 years, 2 or 3 years ago. But yeah, I mean, it happened.
Okay. I didn't know that. How old was he then?
Sixth grade.
Yeah, because I remember you said playing football. I thought, God, but you know, I guess it was a bunch of guys. I mean, I guess he couldn't. You know, like you said, that's really kind of.
Yeah, this just he was just ambushed in the hallway.
Yeah. I had like when I grew up, I had sometimes because when I, you know, I got a little picked on at times because you know I didn't have an older brother, and that was kind of like, you know, in my neighborhood, that was like a no. They had like open season on you because you didn't have any backup.
Yeah.
I went through
grade school and junior high school and high school. Yeah. I spoke a decent brand of English. I made halfway decent grades. And was faggot. Yeah. A lot.
Yeah, well, my neighborhood, they used to call me they called me white boy. I guess cause I studied or whatever. I just didn't seem to, you know, fit in with the old thuggy hoodie thing or whatever, but you know, whatever. But I kind of learned my lesson. You know, about the ninth grade, I just started swinging at people. You know, and it all came to a halt very quickly. It wasn't like, you know, they put any more resistance. Like, as soon as I knocked one of the guys to the floor, it all just stopped. You know, it's kind of a lesson, I guess, to some degree. But there are those who can't.
What a shame. And of course, they figure it out pretty quick, Gary. That what that means is that they gotta outnumber you, like that poor young man in Queens. You know, he didn't have a chance. He didn't have a chance against four enraged violent thugs.
I think also too. I mean, it's always been this way. You know, it's funny you know you're talking about this because I was watching Bill Maher a couple weeks ago, and him and Tab have gotten into a little skirmish about this, and you know, Bill was kind of making a point. He's like, oh, you know, he's talking about what happened in, you know, Egypt and, you know, when Lara Logan got raped, not raped, but, you know, she got sexually assaulted and beaten and, you know, and everything. And he was trying to Bill was making a point how it's so difficult for women over there in that society and being and Tavis was trying to make a point, hey, hold on now, don't point just a finger over there at them. We got problems here in America. And, you know, they kind of had a little back and forth. Because Bill felt like Tav was making it, you know, kind of an equivalent to what's over there. But I think the point was well taken that sometimes America, we like to point our fingers at other places and say, hey, look at how they're repressing women, then we don't look over here in our, you know, our own backyard and realize there are people here being oppressed and beat on. You know, I mean, okay, they may have the problems with women over there, and we everybody see that, but there's no way we can jump back and then we see what's going on with gay people being, you know, beaten and bashed. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do.
Kind of like,
no, it's one of those whole physician, heal thyself, don't go picking at the mote in your brother's eye till you've plucked the beam out of your own kind of situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and with the Christianity thing, when you get the religion into it, see, then it's kind of like everybody backs off because, you know, now you got in the past because what they read in the book between their point of view is that violence on gays is you know, is warranted. You know, and it, to me, isn't that like Sharia law? Isn't that like a terrorist? I mean, isn't that like what the radical terrorists do? They justify stuff against human
well,
life.
Well, yeah, exactly, Gary, because... These right-wing fundamentalist thugs who want to have a literal interpretation of the Bible like the Dominionists and the Christian Reconstructionists, they want to live by the Old Testament. And there's plenty of violence in there that I'll hold up against Sharia law any day for pure barbarity. You know, and it's there in the book. Your child disobeys you, you take him before the city elders, and then you all stone your child to death. It's very plain. It says, stone disobedient children.
Well, you know, like I said before, I mean, it's really how you want to interpret the Bible and what you want to read into it. I mean, you can look at it throughout history, not just by the Bible, but if you just go through history, you know, you're pretty much a scholar seems to be on Roman society. I mean, they had some serious laws back then. I mean, you just didn't break laws, you know. You go back
Pater Familias. The head of the household in a Roman family had the outright clear right to kill one of his children if they were disobedient. I mean, yeah, let's not hang this all on the children of Israel. The Romans took the same tack. Sure.
Yeah, and the Mormons had their very very serious when they were crossing their frontier to Salt Lake City. I mean, they had some very strict laws as well, and you go back to the early Protestants and the Amish and all those other people before them, they had very strict religious laws back then. So my point is, what I'm saying is that I don't know if I would just equate it to just a religious thing, but I think it's just a primitive kind of man thinking kind of thing. I mean, and I've always seen what we see in the Bible and other things is, I mean, just parables and fables.
But you seldom see...
To a long evolution of man.
Yeah, but Gary, you seldom see this kind of horror perpetrated, whether it be ancient Rome or the ancient children of Israel or the Muslim faith or animists or the Hindus or whatever. You seldom see it done without it being done under the cover and with the imaginary approval of some deity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have never heard of an atheist honor killing.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to be intimately connected with religion, and again with fundamentalist religion. Let's be abundantly clear on that. The problem is the fundamentalism, not necessarily the religion itself.
Yeah, I think one of the major issues is that. You know, when you look at particularly like Christianity, and same thing with the Quran and other things that, I mean, even in the Bible, it says clearly that there will be false Christians and people will take the word and, you know, obviously use it for their own justifications. The Bible is very clear that the devil will take over the church. And, you know, I mean, so, I mean, you know, me, because I am a Christian, I do believe, I disagree with you on that point. Because my thing is much. I'll tell atheists quickly. I say, hey, look, you don't know what's going to happen when we die, and technically, me as a Christian can say the same thing. So it's really even, Stephen. You know, nobody knows everything, and man, there's a certain level.
Well, I know what that is. That's actually, Gary, that's something called Pascal's wager. When you get a little time, just look it up and read about it.
I've heard about it, but I never.
There's a lot of, and I'm not being critical or anything, but that's a very, very frequent fallback position for believers of, you know, any sort of stripe. The problem with Pascal's wager, however, is that it presupposes that there is one God. And so you're still back in the stew of having to play Russian roulette with your eternal soul and hope you get the right one. Because remember, every adherent of a religion is an atheist with regard to all others. You know, because they are all mutually exclusive, with the exception of the Unitarian Universalists, which is one of the reasons I respect them.
Well, I think part of the problem is, and why I kind of fall back away from that, because I use the tag when I say a Christian, I don't use it in a sense of exactly what someone else believes, because my definition of being a Christian is different. My definition of God is different. Because, see, I think God is not one God. I think God is omnipresent. I think, to me, God is love, and everything that is in love is God. And so my understanding of it, which I've come to learn, is way, way broader than something probably that is written by man in the Bible. Even though it says that in the Bible, it says the Bible that God is love. And it says there's some mysteries, you know, and all these other things that man don't understand. And it's clear that a lot of the stories in the Bible are fables. I mean, the story of Adam and Eve was written, similar stories written in Africa thousands of years before the Bible was even written. So that's really what I point. So when I say Christian, I'm not labeling myself as in a technicality of what they believe as their religion. My definition is way broader than that.
Just bear in mind that as long as you're self-defining your Christianity, you're getting in deeper trouble with the dogma of most Christian faiths, because they require an adherence to, among other things, the Nicene Creed or the Apostolic Creed.
Yeah, but see, I think it's all an individual thing. I mean, to me, it's like it's what you do with your body and what you that's you. I mean, I have no demand. That's not none of my business. It's up to you what you believe. If you don't believe in God, I respect you as much as I respect somebody who believes exactly what I believe, because I really do believe people have their own personal sanctuary. And you know, that's just how I see it. I don't think, you know, when Obama said he's struggling with gay marriage, there's no struggle to me, because a person who's a Christian who says they're Christian in this conventional sense, they say they marry, they make a vow to God. But two people who are gay, they're making a vow to each other. If they believe in God, they're making a vow to God. Or if they just believe in both of themselves and know God, they're making a vow between themselves. That's not my domain. I don't have no problem with it. And it shouldn't be a struggle for any Christian, Obama, anybody. You know, that's like basic Christianity, you know? You know, live and let live. Jesus didn't go around beating people over the head with his point of view.
except for the, you know, the money changers in the temple.
Yeah, well, I think I can make an argument that that was kind of, they were just probably maybe out of line in to some degree, because people there were coming there in good faith to do certain things, and some people came and take advantage. That's like if somebody came into a certain situation where you were helping people do things, and then somebody comes in and starts doing something that's kind of destroying what you're trying to, you know, build up. So, I mean, you know, I could look at it that way too. I mean, I understand, but teach his own. I respect everybody.
And again, you know, my focus, Gary, just to be abundantly clear, my focus is the fundamentalists.
Oh, no, I listen to you. I've listened to you many times. I mean, I've had some problems sometimes listening to you in terms of, a lot of times I don't like to listen on Wednesday, because as a Christian, it is hard, because I know that you go off people saying people are crazy believing in some white guy in the sky, which I obviously don't believe in a white guy in the sky. But, so sometimes it's a little difficult, but I understand where you're coming from, because to be honest with you, and actually one of the reasons why I'm calling you is as a person of, you know, I guess what somebody would say is a Christian, you know, I really am furious with the Eddie Longs and those people who take what I believe a religion and go out and I don't say a religion, a belief system, and use it against people, just as much as I would be against anybody doing anything about it. I don't even have to be religion. And going around molesting boys, you know, and stuff like that. I mean, you know that I haven't listened to the show last couple of days, but you've talked about the priests, you know, those priests in Philadelphia.
I haven't talked about it. I've not gotten to it yet. It's
Well, I've been reading. It's ridiculous. I mean, they have a list 21.
No, well, it's evil, Gary. It's evil.
It's ridiculous. Oh yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's well, that's what I got back to early with false prophets and all this other stuff. I mean, this is it's disgusting. And the Catholic Church is, you know, as an entity, as a religion, the worst thing in the world. Worse. It is the incarnated of the devil. I don't care what anybody says about it. You know, I have people who are Catholic who get in arguments about it. They are the incarnate. If there's any religion on this earth beyond any religion, and I don't care if we can get into the Quran, Bible, I mean the Muslim faith, there's nothing more bloody and deadlier than the Catholic religion, period. And I don't think anybody would argue about that. I think it's
being I think the death toll on behalf of Christianity is still significantly higher than it is for Islam. But you know, they both got a little murder problem.
Well, they got a murder problem, but I'm just saying that the Catholic Church, because remember, I mean, the Mormons probably right now got the most money, but maybe I don't know how that works, but they are like, I mean, they're worse than CIA. I mean, you know what I'm saying. I mean, it's like, I mean, they've been doing, I mean, they are, it's, you know, I mean, all advertising, you know, was founded, you know, the whole marketing system actually was founded on the Catholic Church. A lot of people don't know this, but they always said that religion was the greatest marketing scheme of all time. And the Catholic Church, they said, you know, advertisers studied, you know, how they, you know, market their services.
Well, it's like the beautiful churches and cathedrals and so forth around the world, and I include temples as well, and so forth. You know, Angkor Wat, the Vatican, the Notre Dame. How many people could have been? And I go back to Yeshua's teachings. You know, feed the hungry. If you haven't done it to them, you haven't done it to me. If you have, you have. The clothe the naked, visit the sick, you know, comfort the sick, blah blah blah, on and on. And it's humane. And yeah, I can't look at Notre Dame or St. Peter's or St. Paul's in London or Angkor Wat or any of these things without wondering how many people could have been fed, how many people could have been clothed, how many people could have been housed with the resources that it took to build these monuments to vanity. And bear in mind, as I came home from my road trip, I drove past, since I was driving through the South, Gary, I drove past mega church after mega church after mega church. And I looked at every one of them, and the same thing went through my head. How many hungry could that have fed?
Well, let me ask you a question on that, Bob. I've always wondered, what if Jesus hosted a radio show, what would it sound like? I'm not sure it wouldn't sound like your show.
I think he'd be... How could he not be furious?
Well, what I'm saying, but if you look at his life and look at how you talk about... I mean, think about it. Remember, these people, you know, they hung Jesus. The church hung Jesus. Not just Jews. People say Jews. It was the Pharisees. because he called them a brood of vipers. I mean, and he went out and sat with the homeless people. He went out and told the tax collectors and the people who were stealing money that he said, you're not getting into heaven. He said, this prostitute, you know, probably was talking about the gays too. He said, they'll walk through the doors before you do. You know, so I'm saying that, you know, I hear what you're saying. I understand what you're saying. But I don't think.
But see, if Jesus was who they say he was, I would be into that radio show, Gary, because I'd be there for the moments when, like, stories of Newt Gingrich passing $350,000 or $200,000 through an anonymous donor to a hate group. I would be hanging on every show because at least two or three times a show there'd be a Republican doing something like Newt did, and on you know on the Jesus program, that'd be when Jesus would like ring the bell and say, "Get 'em, Dad," and there'd be this big crack of thunder, and you'd know that Newt Gingrich or Andy Blom or this hateful woman in Florida or that that vicious thug in Kansas who wants to hunt immigrants from helicopters, or that jackass in New Hampshire who wants to send disabled people to Siberia to starve and die, that there'd just be a bell, and Jesus would say, "Get him, Dad." You'd hear the crack of thunder, and you'd know that all of those, that one of those people, just greasy spot. That would be some great radio.
So you're saying that Jesus, who would at that point in time would come and just, you're saying that you would annihilate those people? You would just go out verbally, or you actually use your power?
No. I mean, no. I said if Jesus had the power that he had, there'd be a lot of right wing greasy spots. Because if you read the New Testament very closely, Gary, you'll find that you know, yeah, there's some love and heal the, there's a lot of that, but there's also a lot of real anger coming out of Jesus, not just the money changers. At one point, he gets really, really frustrated, and he tells the disciples, he says, "In a generation, not one," and he's pointing at the temple. And it's, you know, it's maybe 31 or 30 A.D., you know, C.E., he's not far from dying. And he looks at his disciples and he points at the temple and he says, "In a generation from now, not one of these stones will be stacked upon each other, and you will, and the people will flee to the hills." And he didn't say the guilty people. He said all the people will, and they will look for mercy, and mercy will not be there for them. And then in 72 A.D., Titus, the son of Vespasian, got tired of all the hell and damnation and warfare, and utterly destroyed the temple, and literally left not one stone standing one upon another, save for the retaining wall that is there to this day. You know, remember, there's that verse there where he says, "I came with a sword." So yeah, I think on the one hand he had incredible compassion.
He was talking about a spiritual sword, though. Wasn't talking about.
You know, I mean, that's open. It's all open to interpretation. Now I prefer my Jesus peaceful. But then again, I revere his life, but not his murder. See, a close study will show you, for instance. You know, all that business with the virgin birth and everything that's in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Saul, who changed his name to Paul because Paul was already a known word within the Roman world, and he wanted to sound a little more Roman and a lot less Jewish. Saul writes all kinds of stuff about Jesus' murder, but never has a blessed word to say. Never has a blessed word to say about the miracles that Jesus performed. Never has a word to say about the virgin birth. Doesn't have a word to say about how he said to treat the poor. It's all, you know, Jesus died for our sins, and it ends. It begins and it ends with that.
Yeah, but Paul was a very, you know, a guilt-ridden person. I mean, you know,
he was a psychopath. He'd spent his life huffing fumes from tent making.
Exactly. Now he converted, and he was trying to make up for all his past transgressions.
Well, and he saw.
He has some issues. And I think he kind of hints that he has some issues in it.
Well, and you know, you're the one who just said that it's marketing, and Paul was the original original marketer. Mm-hmm. He took a little bitty, relatively unknown subcult within Judaism, and translated it into the Greco-Roman world and made it palatable for their consumption. Right down to the name change.
Yeah, the only thing I would argue with that is that Paul wasn't in it for the money. And that's what I was trying to make it with the advertiser, was with the Catholic Church.
Well, there's nothing in his letters that said missed a meal today. And there's not a mainstream preacher.
Preach for a lot of money.
There's not a mainstream preacher who has missed a meal since.
Well, you know, the brethren are always gonna kick you in something when you come. I mean, it's just that's how they do. I mean, any situation.
I mean, remember,
I got your point, but
I'm three or four generations. I'm three or four generations removed from the greatest circuit riding evangelist of this region of the Virginias. I'm direct blood related to him.
That hail coming type preachers.
Not just that. He preached that it's God's will that white folks own black folks.
Yeah, of course.
The church, it's called Sam. And irony of ironies, his name is Sam Black. And the church that's named after him says Sam Black Church, M.E. South. And he and the word South had to be put on there because he was such an ardent Confederate. But the point is, the man was chased by Northern soldiers from Dan to Bathsheba, but they never caught him, and he never missed a meal. And so that's why I say that I have the genetic ability to smell chicken frying from 50 miles away.
Well, maybe you're trying to write this, you know, since it's in your generational lineage, maybe you're trying to make up for those guys.
Oh, yeah. No, I freely acknowledge, Gary. I'm working off a bunch of stuff. I don't have the guts to post the photograph of my, there's no circle that says here he is, but there's a photograph out there. I've got it in my computer right now, and I don't have the guts to post it because it's a Klan rally, and the guy leading it was my granddaddy. I got a lot to work off.
I understand. We kind of do agree somewhat on Jesus' teachings in life, even though we may not agree with the so-called terrestrial or spiritual advantages or whatever you want to call it. I'm saying just give us believers of Yeshua, its correct name, a little bit of a break.
Well, I'm not trying to ride hard on the people who live the life according to what Yeshua teached. I'm talking about the John Hagees and the vicious fundamentalists in the Southern Baptist Church who believe that it's God's will that we not have health care for poor people or health care for people who work their butts off and get sick and have their worlds ruined. Those are the people I'm reserving the lightning bolts for. Just greasy spot.
I would say this is that, you know, we can argue about this, but I do believe that we are in the last days, because it's very clear to me that if they don't poison the sea with oil, we've had that disaster on our hand within the last year, they don't poison the sky with radiation, you know, if they just don't kill each other with just fighting the war, that the world and man is hell bent on bringing this to closure.
Well, Kurt,
you know, because they're blowing up the mountains. You know,
yeah, Kurt Vonnegut had a great deal of reverence for Yeshua, but gave not a whit about religion. And toward the end of his life, he said, I'm convinced that humanity is a virus that the earth is desperately trying to rid itself of. And that may be the case.
I remember him saying that. I saw him actually on, I think he was on Bill Moyer's show. I saw an interview. It was one of his last interviews or whatever. And
remember, we've been toddling around for maybe, in one form or another, for maybe 3 million years tops, Gary. And
the Earth is going to flush us out.
Yeah. And we as humanity have proven ourselves thus far to be far less successful than the dinosaurs. Because they were here for hundreds of millions of years. Not that you'll ever get a Baptist or a fundamentalist or a Pentecostal to sign on to that, because, you know, they're getting ready to open an amusement park about Noah's Ark that's going to have dinosaurs on the Ark in Kentucky, and it's being paid for down there with taxpayer money.
Well, that's a whole other fallacy, because anybody who knows about and reads the Bible, the Bible is very clear in Genesis that there really isn't a way you can track time in it at the beginning. When it talks about it, it even indicates that there were men here before Adam and Eve. You know, so I mean, I don't understand what they're reading actually. Personally, I don't.
Kind of, well, they're making a bundle off of the credulous and the oatmeal dribbling, and far more so than following the Ten Commandments, whichever version it is you prefer. They're following Fields' Three Commandments, and I've mentioned this before. Anybody engaged in fundamentalist televangelism or big-time money-hustling religion is following three commandments. They are as follows. You can't cheat an honest man, never give a sucker an even break, and don't smarten up a chump.
You don't actually believe in a creator at all? Or
Yeah, it's hard to say what I do. No, I believe in the universe. I believe, and again, I understand the danger of using the word.
Intelligent design?
No. If there was intelligent design, I wouldn't be on medication to keep my triglycerides down. I wouldn't have an appendix, and there wouldn't be tsetse flies.
Yeah, but maybe the thing is so intelligent that it realizes that free will and things must come to an end, you know, the life cycle, you know what I'm saying? Maybe there's a design beyond what we understand as design. We see design as like, I should, you know, be in a nice home all the time, you know, I should be, you know, healthy until I die, you know, maybe the designer is beyond our thinking, you know.
But see, that requires me to just punt the brain entirely. And at that point in time, you know, then we're just toys on the planet, no free will, everything's predestined, and I can't go down that Calvinist road, you know, where the rich are rich because God likes them better. Can't do that, Gary. Because all you have to do is have a passing familiarity with zoology, biology, geology. And intelligent design just goes bye-bye. But, you know, a universe that is a living, breathing organism, yeah, understanding the danger of the word believe, I can halfway buy into that. I certainly don't have a problem.
I'm saying that there's some things beyond our understanding. As you're saying, like, the brain shuts down. I think our brain has shut down. I don't think we understand the ultimate design of things. We see semblance of it, and we see form, and light and everything, and you know, as we see it, and we kind of understand it, and we can write little things down, take notes. But in the end, I can make the argument that this thing is such a big mystery that no one person can sit down and say, I know what's gonna happen. It's too beyond us.
We
died. Something that's as basic and simple as that happens all the time, in millions and millions of times, over and over and over and over and over again. We still don't know how it works. That shows you the limitless, the knowledge of man.
There's a quote out there, and here it is. Our good buddy Dennis down in Kentucky uses this as his signature line on his emails, and I knew it would come in handy. This is a quote from the philosopher Epicurus. It goes as follows: Is God willing to prevent evil, but not able? Then he is not omnipotent. Is he able but not willing? Then he is malevolent. Is he both able and willing? Then whence cometh evil? Is he neither able nor willing? Then why call him God?
Maybe, like I said before, maybe God just says that, you know, everything has its entity. I mean, the evil in the world is really caused by man. So, I mean, most of it. I mean, granted, he created us and everything. How much control should he have? Should I come in your house and control your house? You know, I mean, that's the argument. It's a back and forth argument. I mean, he created us and gave us free will, and then people could say, hey, I'm glad he gave me the life. Now what am I going to do with it?
And
if I don't,
and he also right apparently, thing, and he gave us function. If indeed he created us, it, I mean, at best, yeah, I can't stand to refer to God as a he, simply because ascribing sexual personality to an omnipotent being is a bit too human for my taste. But if that's the case, then the God also gave us questing intellects, which gave us the ability to question its very existence, and therefore I don't think it will take much umbrage at the fact that I'm not convinced.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is that if it creates us and it says gives us free will, it says okay, and if this thing is hurting the planet, this thing will. I'm going to let this thing die. I'm not going to intervene. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying.
But I guess we're into that space, but, you know, free will toward what? Usually, as I was taught growing up when I was being emotionally abused in the Baptist church, the free will was the choice to either accept Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior or forever burn in hell. That was the sum and total of free will as it was explained to me.
But the problem is,
and I can't buy into a creator that creates something and loves the something it creates and then loves it so much it is willing to condemn it to eternal torment. See, I can't square that circle.
Yeah, but I think the problem with like a modern, like a lot of churches or whatever you go to, I mean, you know this. I can go into church, a lot of churches nowadays, modern, and I talk to Christians and we talk about the Bible and everything, and they're just very like infantile and don't understand, not a strong intellect. And they can do things and be very smart people. They may be FBI agents, they may work for the government, they may be doing something. But when you get down into talking about spiritual things, about the Bible, they say they believe, really don't understand it. They don't know it. At all. You can talk to many preachers and you see this very, very rigid understanding of what the Bible is. And it's very infantile. And like you said before, it's a very controlling thing. It's very primitive. Even to this day, you know, the whole thing about it. You know, any person who's named for like the other, they're way more advanced on just from a philosophy point of view of their religion. It's just more evolved, whether it's the right religion or not the right religion, because they go into deep things that philosopher Tao, whatever, I can't say his name, Tao, but you know what I'm talking about. It's like 2,000-year-old philosopher who wrote those, I think it was 88, I don't have to think of it, I can't think of it right, but he had his 88 points of philosophy about life and the first, the force and the universe, how things work. And when you read all of those things, you start reading, it's really deep, and it just makes total sense of that there's a strong moral law in this universe that is not to be violated. And once it's been violated, it like Kurt Bowden said, it flushes itself out. And we see a lot of that now with man. I mean, he's becoming morally corrupt, and he's blowing up mountains. You know, I mean, just the stuff they do just makes no sense. They're destroying their own habitat. Because they don't have a basic meditative understanding. They haven't even meditated. Just sit down and think for a while. Why am I in this religion? What do I actually believe? You know, and I think that's kind of like the ultimate problem with religion. It's just primitive. It's primitive.
And there are those people who appeal to the for whom that primitivity, is that a word, is some sort of a calling card. As if, you know, the world itself will be less complex if we just ignore its complexity. But that's
well,
just...
Well, simplicity is hate. If they can just off a couple things, you know what I'm saying? It's like hate. Because to me, this is what I always have defined the universe as, two forms of things, love and hate. Love, who is the creator, created all things because he loves the thing that was created. So he created. It could be he, she, whatever the unisex word we can use it. But, you know, he, she, whatever. But... hate is the opposite. It is, I want to destroy what love has created. And so to me, there's always two forms of things. So when I hear Republicans or Newt Gingrich and all these other people talking about stuff, they just hate. They want to destroy,
and yet the haters somehow seem to come out on top more often than the people of peace like you and me. And again,
I don't think so. I disagree with you that because I think everything has been made. I mean, all the beautiful songs. I mean, you have love for your wife, the children. I think love has proven to outbeat hate. I mean, I think that's what's propelled the universe. I mean, what I'm saying is that there's no existence without love. Because, you know what I'm saying? Love is creation. So as we advance as a society, someone decided, well, you know, I love computers. I'm going to make computers. Someone said, I love cars. Someone said, I love movies. I make great movies. You know, and those things add richness to our lives and our experience as human beings. So therefore, we go, wow, there are, you know, I know sometimes we get so involved in politics, but sometimes, especially when Bush was in office, man, I went through a long period, Bob, I used to love to listen to music, some of the music you play. Since Bush came in office, I don't listen to the music anymore. I don't know what happened. I guess I got some, you know, got involved in politics that I stopped listening to.
And you know what? We've got to be careful of that because burnout is a very real thing. And we have quickly shifted from the philosophical into the concrete. Burnout is something against which we all have to guard. And that's why, you know, that's why I fun around and clown around and carry on some, and we giggle and laugh and make fun of the goofy women in tiny tops complaining about Asians at UCLA, among other things. Just got an email from Robert. He reminds me that in the book Venus on the Half Shell, which was written by Kilgore Trout, which was, of course, a nom de plume of Kurt Vonnegut and one of his creations. In Venus on the Half Shell, God created the universe and then got the hell out. And that's kind of the Aristotelian model of the prime mover, the watchmaker, whatever, who starts the watch, who starts the watch moving, and then walks away. So, yeah, I mean, it's obviously, you know, these are existential questions that have bothered humanity since we fell out of the tree and learned to outdo the vultures. And I guess
right now you got a mountain blowing up next to you, and you got to deal with that. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So you have to power it down.
And Ron in Raleigh is taking a little bit of issue with you, Gary. He says the opposite of love is not hate. The opposite of love is ambivalence. And I think he makes a profound point in that regard. I've got to roll on, but this has certainly been a Jim Dandy prayer meeting kind of conversation.
All right, well, that's what we're here for.
All right, you take care, Gary. Good hearing from you, brother.
Okay.
All right. Bye now. And, you know, maybe I need to say that clearly, that my inability, my unwillingness to accept 2,000 years of dogma is in no way a condemnation of anyone's willingness to accept it. But I don't. On the other hand, is there something mystical out there? Could be. Don't know. And that's the difference between an atheist and an agnostic. I'm an agnostic. I don't know. Gnosis is the Greek word for knowledge. And an agnostic is someone who don't know. An atheist is someone who says, no, there isn't. There is no compelling proof for the existence of God. It is certainly not the existence of God or a God is certainly not. It has never been shown by any sort of empirical evidence. But I guess my mind is open enough to say that could be. But any organized faith that tells me that there is a strict set of rules for how we will define supernaturalism, spiritualism, mysticism. Mm-mm. No, because, well, I mean, that's the first trouble that Jesus, this really is turning into a Wednesday night prayer meeting. That's the first trouble that the disciples got in. They kept wanting concrete answers. There's that very famous verse, Master, when you are on your throne in heaven, who among us will sit at your right hand? And Yeshua just gets totally pissed. And with that classic sense of humor, you're all getting crowns, okay? Every one of you gets a crown. It's going to be crowns for all of you, okay? Now can we focus? Because he spoke in metaphor. He spoke in parables to the extent that he spoke at all. And he wasn't telling, I mean, because if he wanted people to follow an organized religion, there'd be a bunch of them. There were a bunch of them already that he could point to and say, oh, it looks the Essenes are getting it right. Because John the Baptist came from some sort of Essene or semi-Essene tradition. The Pharisees were the evangelists of their day. He could have pointed to them and said, hey, they're doing a pretty good job. Go join up with them. But Yeshua was not about religion. That was Paul. Paul was about religion. Yeshua was about spirituality and about paying attention while you're here and realizing that there ain't no dress rehearsal. Or at least that's the way I read it. Betsy writing in, quoting Elie Wiesel, the opposite of love is not hate, it's indifference. The opposite of art is not ugliness, it's indifference. The opposite of faith is not heresy, it's indifference. And the opposite of life is not death, it's indifference. It's when you don't give a damn. And that's what that whole, if you've done it unto the least of these, you've done it also unto me, is about. If you've not done it unto the least of these, you've also not done it unto me. Because if you've not done it, you've been indifferent. Indifferent. And if there's a soul, indifference is where souls go to die. and that, not some giant universal metaphysical barbecue pit. That is hell. Because that is what separates you from the commonality of humanity. Oh, shut the f- up, Bob. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Jim, what's up?
Well, listen, I don't want to get into any type of religious discussion, okay?
Oh, goody.
Both of you have points that are very well taken by this listener. First, I want to compliment you on your bumper music. I love Alan Parsons.
Well, I do too, and that just seems so appropriate to the moment with in light of who and what we were talking about.
Yeah, well, exactly how we first started out. And, you know, my comments are mainly restricted to, or totally restricted to, what you were talking about earlier, the anti-gay thing and the hate and the malice and the lack of compassion, the lack of human decency and the rote stupidity and the sexual ambivalence that these people have that cause them to commit these crimes and do these horrible things. You know, the very language that they use, the semantics of the language they use, like that woman who was talking about, she was quoting the New York Times, you know what I'm talking about, remember that?
Right. Well, and by the way, Jim, Betsy tells me that the New York Times original coverage of that event in Texas, Betsy's quote is, the New York Times was way, way out of line in their original coverage.
Well, you know, right. And
I don't know the story, but... yeah.
You know, that type of linguistic expression is the same type of linguistic expression that encompassed 60-something years ago terms like special handling and final solution.
Yeah. There were very nice meals served at Vanze while they went about the business of plotting mass murder.
Yeah, they sure did. But, you know, discrimination and hate and things of that nature, when you've been the object of it, believe you me, son, there ain't nothing like it. And there is no feeling of almost self-abnegation, of loneliness, of questioning why you're here or why you are what you are and what you've always been and things that you can't help and why are you being beaten and why are you being made a Matthew Shepard or so many other people who have been denounced and persecuted and killed because of something that over which they have no real control. People are what they are. And whether you're gay, whether you're straight, or whatever, or whether you're homosexual or whatever, I don't care. You are what you are. And for the short time that we have on this planet, I simply cannot understand why people cannot accept that and leave one another alone. Because there are so many obstacles that we encounter in life that are going to naturally occur. We don't need these people out there creating more and creating a situation that makes it even more difficult for us to have some type of fulfillment, whether it's sexual, whether it's spiritual, whether it's material or whatever. And I don't mean material in the sense of the way some people are just totally materialistic, but just to survive. I mean, you've got a lot of people out there who just simply enjoy erecting all these impedances to any type of road that a person might take to achieve some type of fulfillment.
Exactly.
Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, it does. Makes an abundance of it, Jim.
I have no desire to make anybody's life unpleasant. I have no desire to condemn anybody for what does, as long as it's not like some of these people that you've been talking about who will rape an 11-year-old girl. I mean, when you mention an 11-year-old girl being assaulted and raped by 18 men, now, Bob, what kind of pleasure could be derived in that? In all of my life, and I've lived a long time, I had never even imagined any form of pleasure that I could derive by forcing myself upon anyone in that way or any other way, unless, of course, I was in a self-defense situation and some guy had a rifle who was shooting at me and I had to shoot back at him just for self-preservation, which is innate and instinct in me.
Exactly. And yet, and yet we, it's like that wrong-headed Supreme Court decision of a couple of weeks ago that said that Westboro Baptist and those hate mongers are in the right. And of course, it was the same kind of hate. It's always the same kind of hate. It's always the same kind of poisonous fruit from the same kind of poisonous tree, Jim. It's either gender-based or sexuality-based. Or race or ethnic based. I mean, that's the some of it's religion based.
Well, all these
and it gets upheld as being a central tenet of our successful democracy, which just drives me nuts.
Well, it sends my sanity racing over the edge of the cliff too, Bob. You know that you and I have been talking about this for years, and you know my story. I know your story, and I don't agree with you about a lot of things, and you don't agree with me about a lot of things, but it still does not stop us from having a decent conversation about one thing, and that is humanity, tolerance, and decency, and the ability to simply live and let live as much as you possibly can. I guess to the fires
and
me.
And yet that is too much. That is too much to ask of some people in not just our society, but in others. But it seems perhaps because we're so near to it that it's more prevalent in ours.
Exactly. And you know, I personally have been the victim of a lot of discrimination and hate crimes. I know what I'm talking about. A lot of my friends have too. A lot of them aren't here anymore, Bob.
Yeah.
A lot of them were just allowed to die back in the 1980s because the Ronald Reagan administration wouldn't even get an electron microscope down to Atlanta for the CDC.
Well, wouldn't even acknowledge that these people were sick.
Exactly.
You know, again, while the filth merchants like Jerry Falwell were describing what hadn't even yet been identified as AIDS and certainly not as HIV, while filth merchants like Jerry Falwell were simply saying that it was a gay plague.
Grid, gay cancer, or retribution. And they said that it was something that would eliminate, well, it's going to destroy all those faggots and all those drug users. Oh boy, did they get that one bounced back on them, didn't it? Because that little virus or retrovirus turned out to be an equal opportunity killer for everybody.
Exactly, and not to turn this toward a religious bent, but you know there is that verse in the book that says, "Cast your bread upon the waters, and it will come back to you, pressed down and shaken together." And it doesn't necessarily say that. I mean, that verse is kind of neutral, Jim. That's the closest that the New Testament gets, I think, to acknowledging what, you know, for a few thousand years, the Indian subcontinental cultures had identified as karma.
Well, you know, my mother used to tell me this a long, and she used to repeat this constantly. There is a destiny that makes us brothers. No man goes his way alone. What we send into the lives of others will return into our own.
Hear, hear. Your mama was, of course, a wise woman.
And, you know, when I think about these Republicans, and, you know, we're jumping the bridge here. I was just listening to MSNBC tonight. They were talking about nuclear power. Well, the Republican Congress or the Republican House or the one that was elected in November, they stripped every bit of financial support from solar and wind. But yet they added on all they could for nuclear. I wonder how these idiots are thinking now that they're staring at another Chernobyl over in Japan.
Or what may turn out to be something that makes Chernobyl pale by comparison.
Yeah,
I mean you remember the movie and the China Syndrome, and what that phrase meant. Well, that phrase is actively being bandied about now in terms of Japan.
I know it is, and you know, conceivably, I mean, now they're telling people to leave Tokyo. They're telling people to get off that island of Japan because they don't know what this stuff is going to do. And it's just because of rote stupidity and arrogance in dealing with a power.
The head of the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission addressed Congress today.
What did they have to say, Bob?
The reporting says that spent fuel rods in Unit 4 of the Fukushima Daiichi plant have been exposed, and that the result has been the emission of extremely high levels of radiation. Gregory Jasko told the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee hearing the following: what we believe at this time is that there has been a hydrogen explosion in this unit due to an uncovering of the fuel in the fuel pool.
That's right.
We believe that secondary containment has been, not damaged, Jim, destroyed, and there is no water in the spent fuel pool, and we believe that radiation levels are extremely high, which could possibly impact the ability to take corrective measures.
The only thing they could possibly do, they're saying now, is to try to get some water in there by shunting some type of power grind to the pump.
As advanced as Japan is, they don't have any robots to do that. And this is the horrifying part.
You got 50 dead men right there. In that
he said, this is a situation where people may be called in to sacrifice their lives. It's very difficult for me to contemplate that, but it may have reached that point.
I believe it has, because I remember back in 85 when Chernobyl went ballistic, what happened to all those helicopter pilots who flew over that thing and who were trying to drop...
Well, what was the... Jim, and I bet you know, what was the name, because we've talked about Chernobyl, we've talked about Three Mile Island, what was the name of the Soviet submarine? Not the Kursk, because that was a horror show, too.
Oh, yeah.
But the one back in, what, the late 50s, early 60s, that was such a horror.
Oh, I can't think of it.
And that thing went completely sideways.
Yeah, it sure did.
And this is the part that drives me the batty. There are still people who are deeply invested and have deep political or financial reasons for supporting this, who persist in saying, well, you know, we don't want to judge nuclear power by this. It can be safe. You know, here's a situation, and you know, it's kin to the same thing with coal. The process is deadly from the moment that the fuel is dug out of the ground through its processing and through its use, and even after it has been used up. There is never any part of that cycle where you can say that it is finally safe.
No, it's not. It never will be.
And yet there are people who want to say, well, you know, it never happened here.
But the thing about it, it was brought out tonight, and it's very true. And the people who will ultimately decide what they're going to do with this thing are not the protesters, but the investors. Because they're going to push nuclear power and any other unsafe means of power production, as long as it's going to line their filthy pockets, and they don't give a damn.
And but there's even a problem in that metric, Jim, because look at what's going on in the United States. You know, the Obama administration and all the Republicans have run out and said, well, you know, we're still very pro nuclear energy here in America, but we can't seem to build a nuclear power plant without you and I and everyone else as taxpayers being forced to engage in nuclear power socialism and subsidize it with low-interest loans from the government. And yet you don't hear any of these godforsaken, dead-from-the-neck-up teabaggers complaining about that kind of government subsidy.
Well, you know, financially, it's not a very sound investment. Because, Bob, it takes more to it is more costly to do what they can to decommission a nuclear facility, if you can really decommission one, than it does to build one. And the average lifespan of a nuclear plant is no more than 25 to 40 years.
Tops.
40 years is pushing it. Because even the materials that are supposed to protect everybody and contain this genie in the bottle, well, that bottle is going to break sooner or later, as it has there, because they've already pointed out that the containment shield or the containment whatever you want to call it has been breached.
Destroyed. The word they're now using is destroyed.
You know, this could really mean that, honestly and truly, and I'm not trying, well, I've used the word desolationist before, and I'll use it again. I mean, this could cause Japan to really cease to exist as a nation. I mean, you can't live on a place that's been contaminated like that. There's just no way.
No, this is the modern equivalent of Carthage, where the ground is plowed and salt is sown.
Oh, but hell, even salt eventually will leach into the soil, and eventually that'll...
It, right.
...way. But, I mean, this stuff, I mean, you're talking about the half-life of, depending on whether it's cesium or strontium or whichever section of the periodic table you want to draw from, particularly in that particular vertical line of, you know, that has all those elements in there with all those terrific half-lives. I mean, that it's dead. It's gone. It's just gone. I mean, there ain't no way you can safely, maybe a cockroach can run around on it, but that's just about it.
6 foot tall, intelligent cockroaches shall inherit the earth. Jim, thank you very kindly, my friend.
Well, I appreciate your...
And by the way, you know, you talk about our common humanity and stuff, those photographs you sent along. Yeah, that.
You know, when I saw those photographs and I saw those people in those photographs of the 1930s, 40s, and the look of abject hopelessness and the poverty, people living in dugouts and people eating off the ground with plates and stuff like that, and just the look in their eyes, it was just I remember that photographic essay that Margaret Brooke White did. You have seen their faces.
Yeah, and you know what? That reminds me of something, and I've been meaning to mention it to people. I strongly urge people to check the listings for the Travel Channel, and if you see a repeat coming up of the most recent No Reservations with Tony Bourdain, in which he goes to Nicaragua, take time.
He's in Ghana now, isn't he?
Pardon?
Isn't he in Ghana now as well?
I'm not sure. But in this latest episode, he went to Nicaragua, and I watched it, and there was a profound moment in which he went to a garbage dump, a humongous garbage dump of mammoth proportions, and scurrying around amidst the trash
Were people trying to eat.
And one of the reasons that I so respect that program and what he does is because the next scene after that, you know, at one point he looks at a child and says, "Jesus Christ, my daughter's that age."
Exactly.
And it comes, and the essential humanity just comes just running in, and the next scene of him is him just sitting there going, you know, "Sometimes I hate myself for doing this show. What kind of asshole must they think I am?" And maybe that kind of reflection is beneficial once in a while.
Well, I think it is, and I can see why you have been attracted so much to his programs, and I have begun to watch them more often than I used to. And it's just another example of I'll get back to it and just think of man's inhumanity to man. And if you really want to think about Nicaragua, go back to the 1980s when they had the death squads and things like that.
Oh, yeah. I got to interview Adolfo Calero back then, if you recall who that guy was. You can look him up. And, you know, just as genial as can be, but he was a leader of the Contras and would as quickly put a bullet between a human being's eyes as look at him.
Oh, yeah.
And even over the phone, you get this sense of, wow, I'm having a conversation with a monster. Jim, have a good evening, my friend.
Same to you.
Take care. Bye now.
All right.
26 past the hour. You'll forgive me if I feel a need to take just a little bit of a break to catch my breath. This is heavy kind of night, you know? And absolutely no answers whatsoever. No answers whatsoever for what's going on in Japan. And don't blame the Japanese. Don't blame Tokyo Electric. Blame the high priests, the high corporate priests of unholy profit who laid that ancient noble culture upon their blood-soaked altar of solid gold in the name of a god that one of the allegedly holy books calls Mammon. Those are American companies that worship Mammon. So we'll take a little break and we'll come back to more of your calls. Is that okay? Yeah, I thought so. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be back. I'm Bob. Michael. For suggesting that incredibly poignant and trenchant track for this evening. The geniuses of electronic synth music, Kraftwerk, and Radioactivity. Michael said, and I'm going right back to the phone, so don't hang up. Michael said, it is hard to watch what is going on in Japan right now. Even harder to find words to describe what devastation these people have faced and still are facing. Seems pretty likely that the radioactive contamination is much worse than what the media so far have dared speculate, and it's not over yet. Nuclear power is a scary thing, precisely because any amount of preparation seldom is enough to cover all eventualities. How do you test a nuclear reactor for earthquake and tsunami safety? You can't just test their endurance and see how they hold up under various conditions. The safety on nuclear plants are, in that sense, merely theoretical. You know, the fundies like to talk, that evolution, that's just a theory. Nah, you morons. You want to see just a theory? We're watching just a theory in action. Also, this in from Dave in L.A. He says, I'm watching all this banter at the Environment and Public Works hearings today. It's all so proper and measured. Licenses, data, safety, testing, reviews, plant improvements. It means absolutely squat to Mother Nature. And they all know it. When, asks Dave, when is an elected official just going to scream, nuclear is a perpetual death machine. It's death the moment the raw materials are dug out of the ground, up to the time it spews forth toxic waste that cannot be properly contained. Shut it all down. And says Dave, and to top it all off, President, I apparently have misplaced my comfortable shoes, still supports expanding nuclear plants in the U.S. What the are we doing here? Common sense has left the building and GE has stepped in. And you know, Jim a couple of minutes ago, thank you, Dave. Jim a couple of minutes ago talked about our common humanity. And ultimately, I suppose that will triumph. Because there are literally millions of people in Japan right now who have suddenly had vested in them an inchoate right to go and hunt down Jack Welch, the former CEO of GE, and kill him in the street like a rabid dog. I didn't say anyone should. I said they have earned that right. But they won't do it. They won't do it. Because deep in the core of most of us who have normally functioning brains, and by that I'm excluding the fundamentalists and the right-wingers and the teabaggers and the Republican Party, we have a fundamental understanding that violence is not an appropriate response to violence. Reporting in the chat room, all six reactors are going now, and they can't stop it. They can't stop it. Lottie noting the cores can eventually be cement capped, eventually, but the spent fuel rods on the roof will be in the environment forever. They'll be giving off isotopes, maybe sometime in the far, dim, and distant future, when some group of others sees a nuclear signature far in space and wonders what happened here. The phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
You know, if only MacGyver could, when he fixed the nuclear reactor, use the bar, use some candy bars.
Jesus, I thought it was I thought it was a piece of aluminum foil from a chewing gum wrapper and a little bit of bat shit, but yeah, okay.
No, we actually use candy bars. So yeah, it's a crazy.
But well, you know, I'm glad that you brought that up because we have, you know, we have sort of pacified ourselves like a baby sucking on a rubber teat. With stories like that, well, you know, whatever happens, it'll be okay. You know, it won't. It's like David L.A. said, it ain't gonna be okay.
Yeah, it seems like we just look toward what the lobbyist of the day or what the spokesman of the day is saying, and they just inundate us with all of these with all of this propaganda, and we're supposed to all believe it. And it looks like Obama believes it, too.
How could he? How could anybody who says, I have been a community organizer, believe that kind of bug spray crazy garbage?
I think the alternative is saying, I helped kickstart some more death machines. That's problematic to someone's conscience. And I do think Obama has a conscience, so... But I think he has this false philosophy inside of himself that he thinks that all people are inherently good, and you just got to give them a chance, which is that's a big problem. Some people need to go to jail. People.
All people are not inherently good. There are people out there who have
right.
fundamentally misfiring brains.
Right, and then again, that's. That's part of the problem is a lot of people don't understand that the issues that we have now, we have to have stricter fines. You know, when Michael Moore went on Rachel Maddow, he put some handcuffs on the desk.
Yeah.
And that's I'm sorry, but we are at that point now. It's no longer don't do that because they're already the oligarchs and the corporatocrats. And this type of class of people have constantly thumbed us in the eye. So that is our only alternative now, which is higher fines, higher jail time. I don't know how you get there, but I guess one thing you do is you keep the conversation, you keep the dialogue.
Now I'm done with higher fines. No, I want long life without parole kind of jail sentences. You know,
yeah.
if we as a culture are willing to send a kid sitting behind the wheel of an automobile,
right.
who knows nothing about what's going on inside the liquor store,
yeah.
If we're willing to send that kid to the death chamber, then we've got to reexamine our priorities in light of stuff like this.
Well,
because something like can I bore you for a minute, David?
Sure.
Okay. There's a little bit of law that comes into play here. And I'm not. This is not legal advice or anything. I'm just telling you what it is. If you sit through first year of law school, they will teach you in a class called torts about levels of liability. And at the very pinnacle of liability is something called strict liability. And strict liability doesn't require proof of negligence or willfulness. All you got to prove is you did it, and boom, you're liable.
Right.
Speeding tickets are strict liability. Were you doing 72 in a 65? You're guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell me why. Don't give me a no. You did it. You're guilty. Well, that was designed for people who do ultra-hazardous, inherently dangerous things, like building nuclear power plants. You built it. You're liable. You know, under a theory like that, GE should go out of business. And every penny of every share of GE should be directed to the victims of GE's strict liability.
I hear you, but it's completely almost impossible to go against a cadre of lawyers like that. They've stacked the decks, and you know this and I know this, they've stacked the decks in ways we can't even imagine.
You know, Jim just said, there's no magic bullet for the Japanese catastrophe. The genie is out of the bottle. The sugar is... Man, write this one down, David.
Yeah.
The sugar is in the gas tank of humanity. And Jim signs off with burning sorrow.
I did want to mention one other thing about the... When you were talking about spirituality with Gary a little while back. You know, part of the problem for me and is... When you deal into spirituality and religion, it's not that I have a problem with someone's beliefs. It's the problem is occurs, and I've had this issue because I grew up in a household where we were pretty much non-denominational, and we believed or we thought however we wanted to think. Each of us, that's the way it was, and we were always constantly ridiculed from that because of other family members, but. One of the things that starts to happen is when you insulate yourself to that degree, and this is why people who go to church and all that, and this is part of the problem, is that it becomes so constricted and so in such a rigid way of thinking. I was watching a documentary, and for people who are Buddhists, I want you to pay attention to this one. And one of the guys, Rinpoche in Bhutan, was talking about his early life. Now, if you can imagine this, Bob. He grew up in a family where instantly he thought he was the reincarnation of a great enlightened teacher. Instantly, they put that in his mind. But here's the problem of being a golden child. No Eddie Murphy references, please. When he every morning he woke up at 3 a.m. in the morning. Can you believe that, Bob? Every morning he woke up at 3 a.m. in the morning. He had two toys, ladies and gentlemen. He had a paper butterfly and a tin car. Now, Bob, here is the catch. Now, here's the catch of why I do not like and why I have a big detestment of people who go down this road and try to force others. When he was growing up, nothing that he could do. He said, look what I did. And the teachers around him and the family that was around him in his monastery, they would look at him and they would say, well, that's what you were supposed to do because you're an enlightened child. And the other catch, Bob, the other catch is when he didn't, the damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of scenario, when he didn't do what he was supposed to do, he said, what's wrong with you? You are the enlightened child, for God's sake. And that's the problem. That's the problem I have with spiritual cults and religion, of people who want to go down that path and insulate ourselves in a way, what we've done with Christianity and Catholicism, and all of these, and try to force others to think that way. Because it's a road that is a dead end, people. It's a dead end. And it doesn't make a difference. And one last thing before I go. It doesn't make a difference what I think. It doesn't make a difference whatsoever what I think. If you're impassioned about it, and it makes your day a little brighter, that's good. But because you can't take away from someone, the minute you start doing that, your philosophy, your spirituality, everything that you're trying to push onto someone, it all crumbles right in front of you.
Yep.
That's all I got to say.
I know. Yeah, of course you did that. You're the last airbender.
Yeah, I mean that's. I mean, when I saw that, Bob, it was like an eye-opener. I mean, they showed, you know, they had this critical thinker who from Canada who was also in the Buddhist teaching, and he started getting skeptical on Rinpoche as well. And they were just going all – it's one great documentary. And they were just going all over these towns and stuff. And then when he started talking about his family background, I was like, sweet Jesus. He got up at 3 a.m. in the morning as a 7-year-old, a 6-year-old. He was like the Michael Jackson of Buddhists. For God's sakes, for enlightened teaching. And the problem is, the biggest problem, Bob, is that no one has the answers. You can pretend you do, and that's great that you think that, but nobody has the answers. We all stumble, and that's all. That's all I'm really saying. We all stumble. We all try to get through the day and the night. But the minute you try forcing this stuff, it's just all going to go to hell.
Right, and this is where we cue up John Lennon singing, whatever gets you through the night, it's all right.
Right, and just remember what Ben Lee said. We're all in this together. There you go.
There you go. Thank you, David.
All right, later.
Take care, brother. Bye. David calling from Maine, and here we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, so apparently, I've seen these reports here and there about how they're getting close to reestablishing an electrical line. Have you seen that report?
No.
Well, that obviously would be a huge help, I'm sure, but no one's saying when. They're really vague about it, but...
And what's it taking to establish that? Somebody's getting sacrificed.
Well, no. I even saw a report where the U.S. is saying, keep the suicide mission going. Did you see that headline?
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just like, wow, it's just stunning. But I don't know. This is just not living.
But see, can I say something real quick, Sandra?
Mm.
And maybe it's just because stuff like this is in the forefront of my consciousness. There's racism all over the place. Okay? There was one commenter somewhere who said, this is God's wrath for Pearl Harbor.
Well, yeah, no. Yeah.
And see, I can see where people, they're Japanese. They do suicide missions real good.
Well, yeah, no, that's the thing. That's why when I saw just the word suicide, I was just like, are you kidding with that? Just on the politically correct mode, it's like maybe you should come up with something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I thought that the whole thing was so insensitive. Not only that, I don't know. The whole thing is just really bugging me, but I just was calling. I was wondering if you had heard any more about that report.
I was just watching the chat room, and I saw a posting in there that there's like a water cannon truck. They have a water cannon truck there. Dear God, Lottie noting, a water cannon's useless.
Well, I noticed that the Nikkei is like dropping. It's just dropping and dropping, and the yen is going through the roof against the dollar because, people are expecting the Japanese to start selling foreign assets. You know what I mean? It's also
right. Well, we would do well to remember that stereotypes and trite sayings become trite because they're truthful. And sometimes a straw really can break a camel's back.
Well, I'm just, I just am worried now that, we're talking, if they don't get this under control, how much of the island is going to be uninhabitable? And also, how many millions of people are in Japan? I don't know what the demographics are. Do you know?
Dear God, Tokyo alone is in...
It's like 10, it's like 15 million.
It dwarfs New York.
I thought it was just some huge number of people. So, I don't know. I have to assume that, if they establish electricity, shouldn't that provide continual coolant, or is it too late? See, this is, I don't know because I'm not a scientist, so I don't know what that means, but I'm sure it's an improvement, but...
Well, was it Reactor 4 where they said the containment building has been destroyed? I don't know what you can do with water at that point. And, of course, the other thing that was brought out is that the core isn't half the problem that all of those spent fuel rods sitting up on the roof are.
Well, that's the thing that's really worrying. The more I read about, the name is really too benign for what's going on, so... I don't know. I just
There are things that have to be taken into account here, Sandra. And I think you're going there. I think you're on that track. What happens? What happens if there's tons of radiation and the wind shifts? What happens to China?
If you look at there's a lot of close land bodies near.
They're dropping water by helicopter on reactor number 3. Sparky reports from the chat room.
Well, then there's the poor police being forced to shoot a water cannon that they use on, rioters. I mean, the whole thing is it's like amateur hour in hell.
Yeah, Lottie noting the spent fuel rods will be in the atmosphere shortly, and we all know which way the prevailing winds blow.
Well, I know, but what about the the area of contamination. And if the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission is saying that it's dire, you know, that really scared me. I was like, hello?
Yeah.
When that guy testified and said,
When the cheerleaders throw down the pom-pom and leave the game, you know.
But at the same time, you're still getting this gibberish out of the Obama administration about, they're trying to have it both ways, and it's just bizarre. It's like, this is death. You know, this is the destruction of a nation state, and you're still trying to juggle what your lobbyists are telling you to do. I mean, it's so craven.
By the way, that population number you were looking for?
Yeah.
128 million people in Japan.
Is that many?
That's the whole nation.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. I didn't realize it was that many. Good Jesus. Oh, no. Okay, well, see, that even takes it. I don't even know. I don't know. I don't even know what to think now, because where are those people going to go, Bob? I'm sorry. I don't mean to go there, but I'm just thinking, because the government is lying.
One of the amazing things about the Horn family, Sandra, is that we have people with tremendous levels of expertise who can add to the weight of the conversation. Jim has had some contact with this sort of stuff, and just sent a note and said, with regard to the fuel rods, once the covering of the rods are burned away, there goes the neighborhood forever. And the neighborhood is pretty broadly defined at this point.
Yeah, well, the EU came out using the word apocalyptic. This is a thing. I'm starting to listen to the language, and the language is starting to get real hysterical internationally. Yeah, you got the U.S.
and nobody has the first freaking clue of what to do. You know, that's what I meant about Jack Welch and GE and their culpability. There was no contingency design, because at the end of the day, anybody who was ever involved in nuclear power knows, Sandra, knows that there is no such thing as a contingency for a disaster on this magnitude.
Well, and also, you have to question the sort of anti-democratic nature of the whole endeavor, actually, because if it's so damn secretive, you know, it doesn't lend to many democratic practices, right? So I think that, you know, the Japanese people, are being played, and the corporate entity here is just has a history of horrific lying, this company. I was reading about them. It ain't good.
Yeah, the Greg Palast stuff, which I trust people have read because a lot of them have sent it to me. If not, go read it. A consortium that was partially made up of Tokyo Electric Power were on the way toward building new deals to build nuke plants in Texas?
Yeah, no, I know. The thing is, though, we're still not. I mean, Angela Merkel is getting all kinds of grief, because she just said, oh, snap, and shut shit down right away. And now she's getting a lot of grief. Oh, it's going to cost this, that, and other. And I'm like, well, shit. You know, so at least she took a step that I was surprised to see.
Well, I will never forget one.
Pushback.
I'll never forget one night several years ago when John Fox said, I will never figure these people out. No planet, no damned economy. So, you know, all those, oh, well, you know, the effect of the, you know, some of these people just need to be, we're reaching the point where you get to look at them and break out all Dr. Strangelove and say, sit down and shut up.
Yeah, no, it's weird. And also, well, speaking of Australia, you know, I mean, hey, to me, I just think, good, the uranium stocks are falling through the roof, through the floor, since they provide all that around the world.
How long?
I don't know. It's just, it's an industry. You know, Helen Caldicott said that this really may signal the end of the nuclear industry, this whole thing. Now.
Well, if it doesn't, and we're not done, we will be.
Well,
here's through. Yeah, as in cancel Christmas.
Yeah, but anyway, I'm trying, it's so hard to get, you know, measured information, because the way it's looking now, it don't look too good, but I know you got to end your show.
Yeah, I do have to end it, but
I'll say goodnight. All right. Are you going on the road, or are you?
Oh no, no, no. The road trip didn't happen, so I'm here. I'm here for the week, Glory.
Okay, well, 24 hours from now, I just don't know where we'll be. But anyway, have a good evening.
You too. Thanks, Sandra. Bye now. Time to get out of here. Just a friendly piece of advice. Just for the hell of it, find somebody you love. Give them a hug and a kiss. Call somebody you love. Tell them you love them. This is that kind of thing. So it's time to get out of here. Thanks to Coal River Mountain Watch for their enduring support of this program. And Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next.